All right, everyone, welcome back to the Honors Element. I'm Ben Lear, your friendly neighborhood chemistry professor, and joining me
is Morgan Vincent. Hey, Ben, I've been looking forward to today's episode because, you know, there's just something really satisfying about watching certain things mix and others, well, just refuse. Like making salad dressing, shaking up oil and vinegar, then 2 seconds later, they're off doing their own thing again.
Exactly. And today we're diving headfirst into why that happens, not just the oil and vinegar, but more broadly the ideas of miscibility, immiscibility, and the wonderful in-between of partial miscibility. We'll also talk about what's happening at the molecular level. So, Morgan, want to kick us off with some definitions?
Definitely. So, miscibility basically describes whether two liquids will mix together to form a single, uniform phase. Think water and ethanol. Pour any combo together, shake, stir, whatever, and you only ever get one clear liquid. That's complete miscibility.
Yeah, and on the other side, we have immiscible liquids. Those are the stubborn ones. Oil and water is the classic. No matter how much you try, they separate into two layers. And there's a reason. Like dissolves like. Intermolecular forces, what we often call IMFs, are the underlying factor here.
Absolutely. And then there's this in-between state, partial miscibility. One of my favorite examples is 1-butanol mixed with water. If you stir them together, you don't get pure water on the bottom and pure 1-butanol on the top. Instead, you end up with 2 saturated layers. Each layer contains a bit of the other.
Right, so the bottom layer is mostly water, but still holds about 8% 1-butanol, and the top layer is mostly 1-butanol, but can contain around 32% water. It's this sort of weird lopsided compromise. Molecularly, what's going on is that water is both polar and can hydrogen bond, so it will prefer to interact with other molecules that share these same IMFs. For instance, ethanol is also polar and can undergo hydrogen bonding, so it is miscible with water. Oil, however, is nonpolar and cannot undergo dipole interactions or hydrogen bonding. Water molecules prefer to interact with themselves where they have these strong IMFs, leaving the oil to interact with itself.
And with something like 1-butanol, you have both polar and nonpolar chunks in one molecule. So it's happy to partially mix with water, but eventually decides, A, that's enough, and separates out. It's all about the tug of war between different intermolecular forces.
Exactly. It's honestly why chemistry never feels boring to me. You shake 2 bottles and suddenly you're learning about hydrogen bonds versus dispersion forces.
And suddenly you understand why Italian dressing separates in your fridge, or why cocktails can look so cool or disastrous. Okay, tangent over. Where were we? Oh yeah. So whether something's miscible or not really boils down to molecular compatibility, polarity, and hydrogen bonding.
Couldn't have said it better. Now let's take it a step further. What happens when you're trying to dissolve something that isn't even a liquid? Let's talk solids and solubility equilibria.
All right, so let's shift gears to solid solubility, how and why solids dissolve in liquids. This is where we talk about solutions getting saturated, unsaturated, or even sometimes supersaturated.
Exactly. When a solid like potassium chloride dissolves, there's a big dance happening. Solid dissolves into ions. Those ions go swimming into the solvent, but if you wait long enough, the rate of dissolving eventually equals the rate of reattaching to the solid. That's a solubility equilibrium, and when the maximum amount has dissolved, you have a saturated solution.
And with an unsaturated solution, you can still dissolve more, but with a supersaturated one. Oh, that's chemistry's sneaky trick. You actually have more dissolved than should be possible at equilibrium, and the tiniest nudge can make all that extra solid crash out in a hurry.
Supersaturation is so cool to demo. It's like those old hand warmers that crystallize from a single tap. But bringing it back to chemistry fundamentals, all this equilibrium stuff is governed by Le Chatelier's principle, the same idea we saw with vapor pressures a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah, so if you add more solvent to a saturated system, you suddenly dilute it, breaking equilibrium, and the solid dissolves more to reestablish balance. Remove solvent, maybe by evaporation, and boom, you force more solute to crash out as a precipitate. Temperature is another big lever. Generally, for most solids, raising temperature means more will dissolve, because most dissolution processes are endothermic.
Good catch, though not always. Calcium sulfate's one of those rare exceptions where higher temperature actually reduces its solubility, so it's really a case-by-case thing.
I always have to remind myself of that. There are always rules of thumb, but then every so often a compound breaks the pattern. One more wrinkle to keep you on your toes.
And beyond just temperature or solvent volume, chemists can tweak solubility by changing the chemical environment entirely, by adding acids, bases, or sometimes other compounds called ligands that grabs onto metal ions. It's how we purify reactions or recover metals in the lab. And honestly, it's one of those spots where chemistry steps off the textbook page and gets downright practical.
Exactly. Especially in recrystallization. Dissolve, reprecipitate, remove impurities. This is the bread and butter of any synthetic chemist's toolkit. All right, Ben, you want to walk us through how these ideas show up with ionic compounds specifically?
Happy to. So when we're talking about ionic compounds in water, say we toss a bunch of salts into the beaker, we find that some dissolve really easily and others are, well, basically rocks. Take silver nitrate, for example. It is super soluble. But silver chloride? It barely gets going. The difference really boils down to the way ions interact with water molecules and with each other.
And that's where solubility rules come in, right? I remember always wanting to memorize the big tables. But, you know, most of the time you just need to know the patterns. Like most nitrates dissolve, group 1 cations, they're always going to be soluble, but there are those classic exceptions with some chlorides, sulfates, and so on.
And there's a reason we care outside the lab. Knowing how and whether something dissolves or forms a precipitate is crucial in environmental chemistry. Think water treatment and heavy metal removal. In pharma, getting drugs to dissolve at just the right rate. This is true even in cooking. Ever dumped too much salt in boiling water and wondered why it disappears faster as the pot heats?
It all comes back to these principles: miscibility, solubility, equilibria, and being able to predict what'll happen when we throw new things together. So next time you see cloudiness in a test tube or your salad dressing separates, maybe there are some chemistry laws behind the scenes.
I love that. Chemistry is literally everywhere, and these ideas are the building blocks for so much else, from labs to life. Well, that's all we've got for today. Morgan, any last words?
Just that we'll keep layering on these ideas. Thanks, Ben. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Morgan. Take care, and we'll catch you all next time on the Honors Element.